Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Recovery Scene. I'm sorry that we have been off for a little while, the holidays. I don't know about you guys, but this year, for some reason, the holidays really got me. It's like the holidays were back. Last year we did nothing, and this year was like, holidays are back, everything's in full swing. So we are back, and I am your host, Leslie, and tonight I have David and Katie on, and from what I've heard, because you know, y'all know I don't give anything away. From what I have been told, this is going to be quite a good story. So, and you know, it's not just about the storytelling and the sharing, but it's about the sharing hope. You know, and it's like we always say, addiction isn't pretty, but recovery is beautiful. And if we can just touch one person who's still struggling, you know, and give them a little bit of hope, that's always the goal. So what I'm going to do, as usual, you all know the drill, I am going to hand it over to David and Katie, and they are going to regale you with their story, his story. No, it's their story. They're married. His story is her story.
Well, I wouldn't have got to this part without her.
Right, right. Supporters, people really underestimate how important a good support system is. They really do. And, you know, I'm really glad that you were willing to come on and that you're willing to share your story. I appreciate that a lot.
So where do I start? Well, this year's marking my 9th year clean. As I mean, everybody that does, that used to do drugs or had addiction know their clean date, which mine is July 13th. So, it'll be my 9th year clean.
Wow. Congratulations. That's awesome. Yes.
And so this is my wife, Katie. Say hi.
I'm a little camera shy.
That's all right.
So, I started, my addiction started probably, right in my 30s. Okay. So, 30s, I don't know. I was single, probably had nothing better to do, but, you know, go out to that social scene and, you know, and that's where it got started. And I try this, try that, try this. I never did none of that stuff before because I came from a good family. You know, my dad and mom, and they were, you know, good parents. You know, I went down the wrong path for peer pressure. And from that, I did 10 years of drugs, cocaine, stemming from cocaine, crack, and drinking, maybe some pills. But once I broke free from that, with her help, of course, take some credit, Kate.
We were still using for the first year that we were
married.
How long were you using?
Not when we were married. When we were married, about 8 months into our marriage.
Right. Now, how did you start? You know, because I know that you served in the Marines. You served in the military, correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so was it what prompted? Because I was the same. And it's funny that our story is kind of parallel because the majority of people that I interview, I started as a teenager and I started partying in high school and all this other stuff. And I didn't.
I never smoked cigarettes.
Nope. I was a good kid and I came from a good family. Smoke. Yep.
I don't know how to smoke. but I figured out how to do crack. I mean, I don't know.
Isn't that funny? Like, I can't figure out how to smoke, but hey.
I figured out how to do that. Right. And that took a hold of me pretty quick, man.
Right. Now what introduced you, you know, to the drug scene? What made you go from, you know, straight edge David to using drugs David?
I guess just peer pressure. Being around the wrong, you know, crowd. Oh, try this, try that, you know. And then it ended up, you know, of course I was a workaholic back then. So of course I had the money to go party. So I, you know, used my money and, you know, of course they just tagged along, right? you know, use your money to party, and they tagged along. So
right, you always have friends until the money runs out.
You always had friends, and that's that's what supported the drug.
You could afford it.
I could afford it, and they couldn't. Mm-hmm. So, oh, they're my friends now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then everything went downhill from there. The first few years, I mean, you know, like I was starting to be an apprentice into the electrical union, you know. Mm-hmm. So, went through most of that apprenticeship, but I was doing drugs. So, you know, it went downhill from there because I didn't finish that program, and you know, and then I went from, you know, working. I still worked, but I went, you know, I had a bad reputation back then, you know.
Yeah,
it, that's what drugs do.
It affects our performance, it affects our attendance.
Where are you at, Dave? Where are you at? Yeah. Where are you at? And I was too busy focusing on when I can get high next.
Right. So, I need to make a stop before work.
Yep. And I could function all during the day, but doing that, and I don't know how, a little bit of sleep, you know, and, you know, that's probably why I have diabetes. I'm type 2 diabetic, probably because I was lack of sleep and too busy doing drugs all night, right. Waking up 2 hours of sleep every night, going back at it, getting back home and going at it over and over. It just was a cycle for 10 years. So, you know, it was unmanageable.
Right. Now tell us some of the stuff that you went through, you know, during your addiction, how it affected you, how it affected your life, et cetera.
Well, when you have an addiction, you know, you don't pay your bills. you know, you don't pay your traffic tickets. Yeah, you get arrested for driving while suspended. And, you know, that's more important is the high instead of paying your traffic tickets or your, you know, your responsibilities. And you find yourself driving while suspended and then going to jail probably 10 or 15 times in that 9-year period. And then you realize, man, enough's enough. After her help. Yeah, your credit gets ruined.
You didn't have any assets when I met you at 39 years 39, old. Had nothing.
No
apartment. Lived in an apartment, barely, you know, paid rent. I was naive. I was very naive. I heard that he was using, but I didn't want to believe it because I wasn't used to being around, you know, them people with that lifestyle. So, but I loved them enough to, you know, try to find out what's really going on. You know, I wanted to know.
Right. So,
stuck by his side. Tell her about church. Introduced you to church.
She introduced me to church. So I started going to church heavily.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't been going since this pandemic. We regret it, but as far as back then, I was really begging for deliverance of being on drugs, which, you know, I believe to this day that I got delivered from that, from church, and her, of course.
I give God more of the credit, but I think the hardest, I know this is about Dave, but the hardest part for me going through this with him was I had lost my dad in the beginning of our relationship, and he wasn't there for me. Like the whole week that my dad was in the ICU, he was not there for me. His drugs were more important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized, yeah, what people are telling me is true. He's, you know, and then he did show up for maybe 5 minutes to be my support at the hospital toward the end
before my dad passed.
Right.
And tell her what happened because your immunities were low.
Oh yeah.
He had got shingles.
I got shingles really bad. I was doing so many drugs. I got shingles to this day. I still itch right here in my back.
He has scars from them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Katie, this is a story about addiction and recovery. And what we do, the recovery scene, is we interview people whose lives have been touched by addiction. So it's just as much your story you know, David's might be the first few chapters, you know, because he was on his own. But once you come into it, it's your story as well. You know,
I think he's forgetting, like, you know, he mentions he was a functioning drug addict. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, I don't think he quite remembers the nights where I used to stay up crying every night because he would stay out till 3-4 in the morning, didn't answer his phone. I had no clue where he was at all. I had my daughter, which was 2 years old at the time, mm-hmm. and I was pregnant with our son. And before I was pregnant with that, the son we have now, he'll soon be 8. We did have a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. Our first pregnancy didn't make it, and I believe because of him using. So we lost
all the stress I put her through.
So we lost. I was about four months pregnant. Yeah, mm-hmm. and it had a hard effect on me. Also, you know.
And the night she came down with the knife and said, "I'm gonna stab you. Well, if you don't get off this, I'm gonna stab you." So I was like, "All right."
Back up.
Let me get back to that. He said he was a functioning drug addict, but the point I was trying to make wasn't that, is that the sleepless nights I had of him staying out, and I don't think he remembers, he used to come home and sleep till noon. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? Sleep until noon, 1 o'clock, and then you didn't want to get up and find a job to go collect or whatever. Mm-hmm. Until 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
And then I would go collect and then start it all over.
You'd stay gone for a few hours, come back. Oh, the customer didn't pay, you know, but they want me to come back tonight and finish the job.
Well, you're right.
Here we are. Where you at, Dave? 3 a.m. Still working? I don't think so. At 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Now, what made you stick around, Katie? Because my husband, it's the parallels to our stories is I was still, you know, my big thing was alcohol, and I did drugs, you know, a lot of drugs.
During cocaine.
But yeah, he didn't use either. He never has, but he stuck around too.
I guess it's just some people have that soft heart where it's like it's more your emotions take over I was more the type I wanted to wait it out because Dave talked a real good game, and I saw that he was a hard worker. When he did work, he bust his butt to get what we needed for the family. Mm-hmm. The first 4 months of us dating, he got out of his apartment and got us a house. I mean, it wasn't in the best condition. It needed a lot of work, but he did. It's like he was fulfilling all of his promises. I could tell he wasn't all talk, you know, him saying he's going to do this and do that. And he has the potential to make all this money and open his own business, this and that. It was becoming a reality. And I basically wanted to go along for the ride and see what the future held. And we had got married after only, with me being religious and being in the kind of church I am, we don't believe in divorce. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, circumstance of, you know, one being unfaithful, then you can divorce.
Right.
That's the only, you know, reason. But then we had a child, you know, it just a lot of things happened so fast. And then there was that incident he brought up with the knife. I guess I could say I hit rock bottom, and that was my breaking point. And I told him, I said, I'm pregnant. I have a baby in the house. You got to go. No more. I can't do it no more. Right. That was my breaking point where I didn't want him around anymore. Cause I, you know, finally woke up and realized what was going on. So
I started going to a meeting every day for 9 days.
Yeah.
So that helped.
Was that kind of your wake up call?
Yeah, I started going, and through thick and snow and whatever, I still made a meeting every day.
Well, even with the knife thing, I chased him out of the house and threatened him. Wouldn't leave. He lived in the garage in a van with a space heater in the windshield to stay warm. He wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
You had a lot of motivation. You had a lot of motivation to get clean. Well, I want to live. And I don't want to leave my family.
You know, it all started making sense when you stay clean.
Right.
When you can carry money in your pocket and you don't go to the drug, you know, dope dealer, you know, that's when you know that you've crossed over and now you're in a better way. You can carry money in your pocket and you don't go to the dope dealer. Every time you got money in your pocket, you've crossed over into a better spot now. So,
right.
That being said, it's after a year, after I got clean, I started being real persistent with my business and started signing big contracts. Mm-hmm. So we did, I don't know if you're familiar. Are you on the East Coast?
We are Southeast.
So you're where?
South Carolina.
South Carolina. There's, I don't know if you heard of Menards Stores, right?
Yes.
Menards. Mm-hmm. So we started doing a big contract with Menards. So I spoke with corporate and got in the door. Said, what can you handle? So they started giving me contract after contract. So that kind of like woke me up, and that actually put me on the map. Like, now we're making some money. So moved out of this little one little 10 foot by 10 foot office space and jumped into a 2000 square foot space. And from there, just, you know, got better and more successful and, my head on right, and
how has it changed your relationship with your family?
Well, when you know with addiction, you go from one addiction to another, right? Mm-hmm. So I probably give way too much work. I probably do too much work, and mm-hmm. sometimes I don't take enough time for the family. That starts to get in the way. I mean, I look at it like this. I've bettered our lives, paid off our house, you know, mm-hmm. paid off our house in what, 9 years? 9 years, paid off our house, mm-hmm. Cleaned up our credit, was able to get the cars that we dreamed of, you know, mm-hmm. just built up our business, you know, and now we employ how many people? We got
anywhere between 5 to 10 at a time.
Yeah. So
we're able to maintain all that, our bills, you know.
And now we're venturing into, we got food truck business. So we just, you know, we live every day now, just realizing, you know, we try to give people chances. Like, we come across addiction. I mean, there's people that come at us and want to work, and you know, they got addiction. But my thing is like, hey, did you go to a meeting today? Because, you know, every day he comes back and wants to go to work. But did you actually go to a meeting today?
Right.
No. Well, call me when you get at least 20 meetings in, you know.
Right.
Like, it's, you know, as an addicted personality, you can tell when someone's going through what we went through.
Right.
Right off the bat.
Right. And Katie, how's that changed your life, you know, in the last 9 years?
A lot less. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's stress free, but my stress went from worrying about negative things, like, is he out all night using? What is he doing when he's out all night? Right. My stress went averted from that to good things like the business, you know. It went from, I'm able to trust him with money now,
right?
Credit cards. I could never trust him with any cash or credit cards, you know. I just a lot more trust, and
it takes a while to get trust.
Scary sometimes, to be honest, because when he has down moments, I don't want to ask him, you know, are you fiending? What's going on in your head? I don't want to conjure up that if that's not right. what's going on. I don't know how to approach it sometimes. Sometimes I grow distant because I feel like if it is a drug issue, you know, I feel like he's He's brought himself through it before. He just needs time. So someone that's recovering from addiction, sometimes the spouse, you know, can feel lonely because they feel, you know what I mean? I kind of separate. You have to separate myself at times because I'm like, I don't know if that's what he's struggling with right now, but I don't want to bring it up, you know?
Right.
If that's not what it is, right. I don't want to say the wrong things. I don't want to start accusing and questioning. Right. No, I don't know what he's going through.
I really believe that the family members, the supporters, the ones who took the brunt of our addiction. For me, it would be, I'm an only child, so it would be my mother and my husband. Luckily, you know, I sobered up before my kids were old enough. You know, they know all about recovery. They know what I do and they know about addiction and everything else. But I really believe that it varies, but that you all suffer from some level of PTSD because it's got to be, to try and put myself in your shoes or Ian's shoes, that's my husband, to almost feel like you're walking this line, you know, or when's it going to trigger? Mm-hmm. Is this when the relapse is going to happen? You know, relapse obviously doesn't have to happen, but for a lot of people it does. And so the fear of that is always kind of hanging over, you know, after going through it. And the thought of going back to that place, it's horrible for me, you know, and I'm the one. And when I say in control, I don't mean in control of the addiction. I just mean, I'm the one that's in control of my recovery. Mm-hmm. Ian is absolutely helpless.
Right. There's nothing we can do.
Right. So yeah, I really believe that there's a form of trauma, you know, from going through that, because I never, you know, even though I never beat him, I never physically did anything, but emotionally and mentally, he was beaten down because of what he had to go through and the stress he had to go through. And, you know, he said he would come home from work and the drive to the door was like hell, because it was like, what am I going to come home to today?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And he's stuck by your side. That's good.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
I would say he's either really in love or out of his mind. So I'll take either one, you know, at this point.
I think for me, it's a little bit of both. No. Kind of like I'm like the type of person, I want to see what the future holds, you know. Mm-hmm. There are times where, like, he might stop at the casino and I'm thinking, oh God, is that addictive personality going to come out? Is he going to get addicted? You know?
Right.
Can he just go once and not go back? Or is he going to be there every day? Or
if I go there, I just get mad that I spend a little bit of money.
And the type of business.
You don't have to worry about the losing. What you have to worry about with us is the one time we hit it big. Because now it's in our head like, yeah.
That's another story. I mean, my addiction, I should tell this story because it's kind of funny, but, you know, that was one of my things too, is I used to go to the casinos, and then I did hit a big one night after I was whacked out of my mind. Mm-hmm. I was probably up for like 3 days. So me and another dude went to, we got on a plane with the Vegas back then when they didn't do the body scans. Uh-huh. And so they would have done the body scans. Yeah. They would have seen the body scans while we were carrying on us going to the, you know, going to the airport. You know, skinny as all get out. My pants almost fell down because I didn't have a belt on. So that being said, stayed in Vegas and, you know, it was a good time, but. Mm-hmm. You look back at all that and like, oh my God, what did I do?
Yeah. I actually have on TikTok, I have a video and it went insane viral, like in the millions on Twitter. And I thought I would put this out there you know, 40 years old, I'll get like 3 comments, 2 will be trolls, and 1 will be like, okay, Karen. Like, yeah. It's and it was drugs are fun until they're not. When everything goes south, it goes south.
That's a true statement. Drugs were fun until everything else. And then your whole life gets mismanaged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your friends go bye-bye.
Well, yeah. And being a Christian person, I always think of the quote, the devil is a handsome man. He's not going to show up being creepy and gross and dripping with slime. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's not how he's going to get you. Right. Yep. He's going to be mm-hmm. a handsome man. So mm-hmm. the way drugs get you is they're fun. They're a good time. You have all these friends. Life is a blast. Look at all these memories you're making. And then boom, once it goes south, once payment comes due, it's over.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it gets really bad fast. And it's fast too. You know, just as fast as that fun happened, mm-hmm. it just when it goes downhill, it is all downhill. It is a steep hill. Yes, it is a steep hill. One person actually said, my hill is on fire. I'm not just rolling down it. It's on fire. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God. Thank God we got through it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the thing is so many don't. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here. And a lot of us, you know, a lot of addicts and supporters. My husband, you know, he'll make a joke. He'll go too soon. Because we do that dark humor. You know, a lot of us do, and other people look like, how can you joke about that? It's not funny. Well, no, it's not funny, but it is fun. Like, that's how a lot of people deal with trauma. You know, it's, we joke and we laugh, but in the end, it's like, yeah, thank God you're right. We got through it.
Yeah. You know? What they're putting in these drugs now. I mean, now you think like, oh my God. What if that stuff was around when I was doing it?
Yeah.
Scares me to death. That's not
if anymore.
That's easy for me to say, no way, no more.
Yeah, everything's cut with fentanyl. Whatever you're doing fentanyl.
And, you're doing fentanyl.
Yeah, and if there's too much of it in there, because it only takes, fentanyl was made as a tranquilizer. And now they're putting carfentanil and stuff, and carfentanil is an elephant tranquilizer. And so you think of this little, you know, 15-year-old kid, mm-hmm. probably scrawny as anything, whether you're mm-hmm. a girl or a guy, you know, 100 pounds soaking wet, and getting just the smallest hit of elephant tranquilizer. You know, these kids are dying left and right. And some people are just doing fentanyl. And it's terrifying.
It's scary.
It does. We hit a record 100,000 overdoses in 2021.
Why aren't they talking about that? You wonder.
I know. We should be freaking out about that.
That is big time.
It is. And that's only the overdoses. That's only the ones that were, you know, that were found. You know, these are only the ones that we know about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah. And that's why, you know, at the recovery scene, we do what we do, because it's sharing these stories of, look, if you're thinking about it, listen to these stories and don't, you know, and if you are struggling with it, it's not hopeless. This doesn't have to be your life for the rest of your life. You know, there are all these people that were exactly where you are now, and they changed their whole life. It didn't happen overnight, but neither did getting addicted. You know, it's a process.
So what we started to do now, I mean, since we've been fortunate enough, so, you know, we go out and feed the homeless on like Thanksgiving and days like that. We try to give back, but of course COVID kind of put us in our tracks.
Right, right.
So we went out and bought a bus. We were, you know, it's a school bus.
That's hilarious. So, we went out and bought a bus. You know what we should do, Katie? We should buy a bus.
Katie has a shopping addiction now.
So I bought a
we drive to Pennsylvania to buy a school bus.
No, New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Oh, we broke down in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
On the way home.
Where are you guys?
We're in Indiana.
Indiana, Northwest. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So, so all this stuff has been going through my mind. What am I going to do with this bus? So we were thinking about, oh, let's take it to, you know, to make it a RV and all that. So then I had different plans for it now. So, you know, I got a 501(c) company. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking I'm going to rename it Restoration. So being that, It's got a, you know, oven. It's gonna have a sink. It's got a full bathroom, a shower. It's got what, laundry facility. Mm-hmm. So we were thinking about, you know, how do we give back? So I want to give back by, you know, picking up somebody that's got either addiction or homeless, take them out, you know, restore them. Mm-hmm. You know, hence restoration. That's the name of the bus. So restoration, put some restoration going on. Give them the opportunity to get their life back, you know, start. If someone lives, you know, gives a helping hand to somebody, that might change their life, you know.
Right.
We're hoping.
Right.
So that's part of a thing that we're doing now, too. So if I'm not busy enough.
Right, right. But that's awesome. It sounds like life is going really, really well.
Yeah.
In recovery.
I make TikToks. I mean, I don't know. I've gotten the nerve to make TikToks. She doesn't.
But...
so you notice me. You probably noticed me on those on that girl recover. What's her name?
I know exactly who you're talking about.
But she
mission
she,
something. I don't know.
But she got me motivated to start making videos and duetting her because man, she's got this energy. So mm-hmm. when you got, I have a lot of energy. She. On the other hand, doesn't have that much energy like I got. I get up early. I'm full of energy. So, I mean, are you full of energy?
I am not. I'm not a morning person. I'm funny because I go in spurts. Like I tend to come alive around 5 o'clock. Like that's when the house starts to get clean and morning. It's weird.
But energy being... Energy being like you just got a lot of energy and you got to break free, you know, mm-hmm. just share out your joy, you know, that's kind of what I try to do.
Got to put that energy toward positive things.
Right. I don't have a million followers or something like that yet, but.
All right, well, tell everybody where they can find you on TikTok.
David Cowder, just my name, David Cowder, Kouder. You guys can find me there.
That's awesome.
Well, we just try to make, you know, try to make fun videos and try to include my kids. Kyler, come here. Get your little fame. This little kid's put me on the straight and narrow. Come here. Real quick.
He's my rainbow baby.
Yeah. Hi. You gonna be famous?
Maybe.
He's a drummer. He plays drums and he's really good.
Oh, cool.
So you'll see those on Facebook if you dig a little bit.
Yeah, but, that's awesome. A drummer.
But so yeah, we just live we're trying to get through all this. I appreciate you noticing us.
Yeah, and thanks for, you know, being willing to come on here and both of you sharing your story, you know.
I was really surprised that she actually opened up a little bit.
Well, you know, I'm glad she did.
About time.
Right?
And she's supportive.
And she makes these right here.
You know, it's funny because I was actually looking at that and I thought, oh, yeah, she made that. That's pretty.
Yeah.
That's her Valentine Day wreath.
Yeah.
That's my thing. I like to do crap. While he's making TikTok videos, I'm making reefs.
I wish I was crafty. I just surround myself with crafty friends. But thank you guys again so much. I really appreciate being on. And you know, we'll have to follow up.
Stay in touch.
At some point. Absolutely.
You'll see the progress. You'll see the progress of the bus. It'll come to life here in about hopefully a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
It's really cool.
Like the bus. Get on the bus.
It is really neat. I'll take pictures and I'll put them on Facebook. You'll see them.
All right, excellent. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Recovery Scene. Thank you all so much. And remember, addiction isn't pretty, but recovery is beautiful, and we'll see you next time.